ComingToBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, November 15th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour, 15, hour and 20 minutes or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for this hump day edition of the show. Two guests joining me today, the first Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com, the second Wes Reynolds, who you know from Twitter, at Wes Reynolds, and the number one. We're going to talk about the four major betting markets going on right now: college football, NFL, NBA, college basketball on today's show, so plenty of stuff coming your way. Before we get into that, over at bangthebook.com, lots of great content available for you to check out. We've got a bunch of college basketball game previews every day now, all the NBA games previewed, all the NHL games previewed, all the NFL games previewed, bunch of college football previews for this weekend coming up, and of course, I covered all the weeknight games over there as well. My college football power ratings went up earlier on in the week. We'll have NFL power ratings coming up tomorrow. I just wrote up the two NASCAR races for this weekend. UFC will be coming your way tomorrow. NFL Daily Fantasy coming your way tomorrow. We've got golf up over there. Tons of stuff for you to check out. Written content, matchup data section, sportsbook reviews, free contests where you can win cash prizes. BangTheBook.com is your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. This and every edition of Bang the Book Radio is presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. To sign up over at DSI using the promo code BTB and the number 25, you'll get a $25 free bet just to test out the site, check out the live betting interface, take a look around, see if it's a good fit for you. If you decide that it is a good fit for you with that BTB25 promo code, you'll also get a 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook and a 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well if you opt to add some funds there. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests coming your way here today. The first, Mr. Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
It's going great, Adam. Great to hear your voice.
All right, well, we've got a lot of considerations here for week 12 of the college football season, and this isn't the strongest set of games. The SEC predominantly on a bye week here with them taking a lot of FCS or lower-tier teams in FBS. We do have a couple of games. Kentucky and Georgia kind of stands out a little bit. Texas A&M and Ole Miss, of course. But overall, pretty weak slate here for the SEC. But that doesn't mean that we lack games that have intrigue. And, you know, Brian, we talked about this last week. We talked about the dwindling importance of power ratings. We talked about how some of those other angles come into play a little bit more here. Bowl eligibility, bowl motivation, coaching considerations. We're going to talk about some of those games here today. But the one thing I think I noticed this week, Brian, is that last week when we talked about teams that need a win or need to win two of their last three games to get to a bowl, we didn't see any inflation in the lines. This week, I think we do see it.
Yeah, we do. And we talked last week about teams that needed the games a little bit more than others. The Auburn-Georgia was one of those prime examples that Georgia could take a loss. I unfortunately think the committee overlooked that part of handicapping that because they dropped from first to seventh, I believe. We said the same thing with the Ohio and Toledo game, that the game didn't mean anything to Toledo where it did to Ohio. And then we saw Ohio come out and beat the hell out of Toledo. And then, of course, they going to Akron, who had no business beating Ohio yesterday. But you found the opposite. You had a team in Akron that needed that game. And so you got a lot of better effort out of that. So when you see these games near the end of the season, not only are these teams playing for something, but sometimes they are not. And knowing when a team has not got anything to play for is even more important than the teams that do. And as I said, I don't make any adjustments about teams playing harder to get to a bowl game than I do at any time during the season because that's what they're trying to do. But at this time of the season, when they get knocked out of the bowl, that's when you've got your chance to make some money.
Yeah, and it's really hard because these are all things you have to pay attention to. And the college football playoff rankings, I mean, they have the top four teams right as of right now. And obviously we'll see what happens with Clemson and Miami, who should play each other down the line here in the ACC title game. But, man, wouldn't it be nice just one of these years to let the people out there in Vegas, the people that set lines, the people that bet lines, have some kind of say in who should be in the college football playoff? Because these rankings every year, I mean, I can find a bone to pick with them all the time, and that's not necessarily that big of a surprise. It's very rare to get the actual top four teams from a consensus power rating standpoint in the college football playoff.
Yeah, you take a look at Wisconsin, and the reason Wisconsin is so good this year is because they've had the easiest schedule in college football, or one of the easiest. We'll find out. You know, they play Michigan this week, I believe, and then they'll play probably Ohio State in the championship. But, you know, Michigan's not that great, even though I think they are ranked the top 25, and Ohio State has got plenty of flaws. So, you know, if Wisconsin happens to win these two games, you'll know that they're going to be a huge underdog against anybody they play in the Final Four, and, you know, people who follow that will have an advantage of being able to play that early because, you know, the general public is going to look at that game and say, well, you know, they're a winless, or they haven't lost a game all season, and who knows, they may go up against like an Auburn or a Georgia who have two losses on the season, and it'll be a great opportunity for the SEC to make some money there against an overrated Big Ten team.
Yeah, that Wisconsin situation is interesting. I'll be curious to see how the committee handles Ohio State if they beat that team up north and then beat Wisconsin as well, which is, you know, pretty much the way that it's shaping up. And, of course, we're taking the Illinois game for granted this week, but Ohio State's favored by more than 40 in that one. But that'll be the interesting thing because you have ammunition looking at Ohio State's college football playoff case to say, yeah, Wisconsin got to that game at 12-0, but they didn't play anybody. So is that something that reflects negatively on the Buckeyes if we get to that point? Who knows? But, of course, we still have to see if we get to that point. And, I mean, possibly Wisconsin could lose this week. So, you know, who really knows? But, Brian, the last thing I want to ask you about here in a general sense looking at college football, and then we'll start breaking down some of these specific games here, is we have this college football playoff talk. We have all the talk about coaches and who's going where and who's going to be fired and this and that. Do you look to play against some of those biases in the market?
Yeah, normally what I try to do is I go in and I try to look at how the players feel about these coaches. And, you know, obviously if you got a situation like in Arkansas right now, when the players are celebrating that the coach is probably leaving, that's not a team that I'm looking to play on. There's other teams where you definitely, as a player, feel that you deserve to give the best effort you can for your coach because it may be a guy that you really like and he's going to lose his job because you haven't done your job. That's where you would expect a good outcome from those teams coming down the wire. But like something like an Arkansas situation, I want nothing to do with it because, you know, it's obviously the players have not been happy there. The players are losing. People are getting arrested and they're going out after the game, drinking and driving. And there's got to be some responsibility there. So you got to do a little bit more of a deep dive to find out. You can't just overall take a look at it and say you want to go on or against these teams. You just got to go in and read a little bit.
All right, well, let's look at some of these considerations here. We'll kind of put them in practice a little bit with the games that we're going to discuss for week 12. We'll start here on Wednesday night, where game 305-306 features Toledo taking on Bowling Green. Seeing a little bit of Toledo money hit the board here today on game day with the highest limits that we've seen throughout the week. Bookmaker up to 18, DSI at 18 as well. Several other shops out there sitting at 17.5. Now, there are a couple of different ways you can look at this game. For one, you can look at it from the Bowling Green side and say, you know, this is a Bowling Green team that has not been good throughout the year. I know you figured we'd have some value on them from an against the spread standpoint. We have, but they haven't covered a whole lot of numbers this year for people. Toledo, on the other hand, you know, now they've kind of put themselves into a bit of a tough spot with that loss to Ohio. They have the head-to-head tiebreaker over Northern Illinois. They need to win this game, need to beat Western Michigan to find themselves in the MAC championship game, where it appears that they'll play Akron, which is definitely a little bit of a boost for them to get the Zips instead of the Bobcats again. But Toledo's coming off of that blowout loss last week, and that's not something that we see from the Toledo Rockets very often. They're usually very competitive. They're usually the ones dealing out the blowouts. So I think some people kind of looking at this as a little bit of a bounce-back spot for the Rockets tonight.
It should be. My number's 19, so it's a slight edge to Toledo in this one, but if you take a look at the first half stats from last week, yards per play were exactly the same, 6.3, and they were down 10-7 at the half, so it was right there for them. And then Ohio just came out in the second half and was able to do whatever they wanted. And when you have a team like Toledo, they rarely, you know, the same thing happened in the Miami game when they played at Miami. They were winning that game at the half, and then Miami just came out in the second half and blew them out. I don't consider Ohio nearly anything like Miami is, but it's a team that that doesn't see themselves in that position very often. Unfortunately, when they did play that Miami game, they did have a bye week the following week, and then they did play Eastern Michigan, and they win that game 20-15. So I don't know if we can learn anything from that. But, you know, as I said last week, it didn't mean as much to Toledo, so maybe they weren't playing full out. Bowling Green, as I mentioned earlier, was a team we could make money on, as you pointed out. They've covered three out of the last five. They are coming off of a bye, which always helps, and that's their only bye of the season. So, you know, Bowling Green last week, I had them against Buffalo, and they lose that game by 10. But I think this line's about where it should be at this point. It wouldn't surprise me if Toledo wins by double digits but doesn't cover, but it's not going to be a game I'm going to be involved in.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about Toledo, and maybe this had a little bit to do with what happened to them in the second half last week against Ohio, is that they expected to play Ohio again. I mean, you would not expect Ohio to lose as a 2-touchdown favorite in Akron, and then Ohio, you know, should have finished out the regular season, putting themselves in a position to play Toledo again. And I saw some talk during the Oklahoma-TCU game about, you know, what was going on with some of the play calling for the Sooners. And one of the speculations on Twitter was that Oklahoma was kind of holding parts of the playbook back in the second half, trying to give TCU some different things to look at for film study, because the expectation was that Oklahoma would face TCU again in the Big 12 title game. So I wonder if maybe that was a thing for Toledo as well, which is sort of what you talked about last week in terms of it was a game that didn't mean as much to them as it meant to Ohio. So maybe Toledo was holding back a little bit. They're not going to hold back here against a rival, you know, who they can kick while they're down a little bit.
Yeah, that was a big thing. And if you watch the play calling in the first half, it was pretty conservative from the Toledo standpoint. A lot more running than what I thought they would do. Their passes were basically just right up the middle. Nothing downfield. They were pretty vanilla last week. And as you pointed out, they were expecting to play Ohio again. And it backfired on them. Of course, if they went out, it doesn't really matter. But still, it's you'll find teams in that regard. You know, with the whole Georgia game last week, you know, they knew they didn't need to win, and all they had to do was beat Alabama or beat Auburn again. And if they figured if they played Auburn again, then they would have that advantage. Because if you watch that game, it was clear that Georgia didn't bring the same intensity as Auburn did. So, you know, we may be able to take advantage of that. If Auburn beats Alabama, you know, who knows? We may be able to get that Georgia-Auburn rematch. And a lot of people just take a look at what they saw recently with Auburn crushing them. We may get a pretty good line on Georgia if that happens.
One more game in the MAC that I want to touch on tonight. There are actually three MACtion games on Wednesday night, but we're not going to talk about Western Michigan and Northern Illinois today because I want to touch on Eastern Michigan and Miami of Ohio. And this one's interesting because we're seeing some Eastern Michigan money hit the board here right now, and I'm checking to see if maybe Gus Ragland's not going to play or something like that. But I'm surprised to see some Eastern Michigan money hit the board here because this is a team that went to a bowl game last year, first time they've done so since 1987. They got to go to the Bahamas as well, which is something that obviously was great for those kids. But this year they're not going bowling. They're 3-7. Best they can do is 5 wins, so they don't really have too much to play for the rest of the way. Miami of Ohio, on the other hand, if they beat Eastern Michigan this week and beat Ball State, which pretty much everybody has done, they'll get to 6 wins and should be selected for a bowl game. Last year, Miami started 0-6, went 6-0 the rest of the way, got to a bowl game. So they're used to this situation of playing with no margin for error. Brian, how do you explain the line move with Miami of Ohio down to a 2.5-point favorite at Bookmaker and DSI now?
Yeah, this has been interesting line moves. What I'm guessing is there's two different groups looking to play each side, because when this line opened, it was at 2.5, and it quickly went to 3, minus, I believe, 140 in some places. So there was money looking to play Miami as soon as it came out. And then a couple of days later, it bounces back to 3 everywhere. And now you get a little bit more on Eastern. I'm with you. Eastern's a team that not only have they not been winning, their losses have all been close. Other than the last week, then when they did lose by 12 to Central Michigan, before that, their biggest loss was by 5 points. They've had three games going to overtime. This is a team in Miami, or excuse me, in Eastern, that could have easily gone bowling this year. Their power ratings are a lot stronger than what their record would say. When you're looking for next year's wins, we might be able to get some advantage on that. People looking at Eastern Michigan coming off a poor season, but they've been a lot better in what their record states. But now they continue to fight, and we talked about this last week, and they're down by 11 at the half last week, and then they lose by 12 overall to Central Michigan. That, to me, if I was on that team, I would really have a hard time getting up for this game this week against Miami. They go on the road for the third time in 4 weeks. They play Bowling Green at home next week on a Tuesday, so that gives them a shorter week to prepare for Bowling Green. I would think that would take precedence in front of the home fans. And you mentioned Miami. They were off a bye week after a short week after beating Akron 24-14 in that game. And you could tell by the way Miami played in the second half of the game. I had them. I released them as a second-half play, and they had a bigger lead against Akron. They let Akron come right back in it. But they were excited, and, you know, they've been through it before. As you pointed out, last year they won their final games to get on that run and go to a bowl game. I'm a little bit surprised by the line move here. It's definitely somebody else thinking differently than what we are.
Well, and I think maybe what we're seeing, you mentioned Eastern Michigan being power rated a little bit higher than their record would suggest. Maybe that's what this is. Maybe you've got some numbers guys here with the big limits that are kind of coming in on this game. Feel like it should be more of a pick 'em type scenario. But when you put all these situational angles in play, and that's what we've done here during this segment, you can't help but think Miami of Ohio or nothing. I mean, for Eastern Michigan to be 3-7 here, to be plus 11 in point differential in conference and be 1-5, to be plus 26 in point differential and be 3-7, that just tells you how their season has gone with all those close losses. And that wears you down. Not just physically are you worn down late in the year, but mentally you're worn down. And with last week being your last stand where you have to win out to go to a bowl, I just don't know how Eastern Michigan gets off the deck here. If they do, mad, mad props to Chris Creighton for getting this team ready.
Yeah, not only – I'm with you on the power ratings. I've got Eastern Michigan as a one-point favorite based on pure power ratings here. They had their bye week all the way back in week three. So they've been playing all this time without a bye week. And as I pointed out, Miami had that that game against Akron last Tuesday. So they've had a full week – or 2 weeks ago. So they've had a full week of a bye right here, full week of practice. This is definitely – if you're looking at your season-long power ratings, you would want to play Eastern, but the situation definitely favors Miami here. And, you know, if in my book, Miami, it's worth the additional price you have to pay to be on Miami. I think those numbers are well within range, as long as you don't have to lay more than three here to be an excellent play.
All right, let's go to Friday night. Let's talk about UNLV. They take on New Mexico. New Mexico, a 2.5-point favorite in this game. This is game 319-320 on the board. We talked about UNLV a little bit on last week's show. Excuse me. With that loss at home to BYU, they have no margin for error now. They need to win on the road in Albuquerque, win on the road in Reno to get to a bowl game here. It was a pretty devastating and deflating loss, I think, for UNLV last week. They have a chance to bounce back right away. But you've got a New Mexico team here. It's senior day in Albuquerque. They've got some players to honor. I don't know what the situation will be like with Bob Davey going forward after there was an investigation into mistreatment of players. How are you seeing this game, Brian?
Yeah, this is one of those games where there's so many question marks here to make a definitive statement. You look at New Mexico last week, just their first half numbers, they allowed 10.6 yards per play to Texas A&M. Texas A&M just crushed them. Scoring 48 points in that first half. You go back the last five games for New Mexico in the first half. They score 7, 3, 0, 10, and 0. And UNLV is not scoring in the first half either. 7, 7, and 9 in the last three games. It's not like either of these teams are playing great defenses. Texas A&M's, that's one of their weaknesses of the defense. They can put points on the board, but they can't stop anybody. Utah State the week before, has not stopped anybody all season long. So these are two offenses that are really struggling right now. We saw late movement against UNLV last week. I'm looking to play against both these teams, to be totally honest with you, so I'll be passing on this one.
Yeah, and I don't blame you for that sentiment. I mean, this is a New Mexico team that won, what, 9 games last year, I think, wound up going to a bowl there with that Bob Davie option offense. And then this year just hasn't really worked out for them. And to be honest, they haven't really played too many close games either. They lost by 2 to New Mexico State in the rivalry game in week 2, lost by 3 to Colorado State. Most of their other losses, games where they just weren't very competitive. So, you know, part of that has to do with the fact that once New Mexico gets down, because they can't throw a forward pass very well, you know, it's hard for them to play catch up. But let's look at this from a UNLV standpoint here. I mean, this is a team that could very well go 4-8, could go 6-6, could split these last couple of games. But as far as the direction of the program goes, Tony Sanchez seems to have this thing going in the right direction. They seem to be certainly better than they were a few years ago. So do you feel like UNLV is maybe a little bit more trustworthy here in a spot like this than they would have been in years past?
Maybe in years past, but I don't know if I agree with you with the UNLV going in a positive direction. First of all, he's a high school coach, never coached college ball in his life as a coordinator or even as an assistant. So it was a risk for UNLV to do it. The reason why he was hired was Fertitta brothers, who own the, you know, the wrestling, the UFC or whatever. They also were big sponsors in town. They over at Bishop Gorman, which is like one of the best college football teams, or excuse me, best high school football teams year in and year out. They're having a down year this year, but they put a lot of money into it, and they said we will do this. We'll put more money into the project over there at UNLV, but we want this coach. Well, it's nice thought, and he was very good in high school. His brother actually coaches the Bishop Gorman team now, and his brother's had the same kind of success that he has had. So I don't know if this point, if it was the right call at all to make him the coach, and I don't fault him at all. It's just that when you haven't been there before, it's a learning experience from day one, whereas other teams have had guys that have coached in college football, regardless if it was a head coach or assistant coach or one of the other coaches on the team. They've been there. They've done that. And for UNLV, they continue to make the same mistakes when they are favored in a game. They've throwing up clunkers all season long. They will surprise some people. You know, they've done that a couple times this year. Beating Fresno was a nice surprise for them, and then people thought, okay, well, maybe this is it. And then the next game, they fall on their face again. So there's no consistency out of UNLV, and so it's tough to back them as a favorite.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you for that. You certainly have a better pulse on that team than I do, so I appreciate your insights there with that one. One more college football game I want to touch on here, and this one we kind of talked about a little bit in passing at the top of the segment. This game, 379-380, noon Eastern time kickoff between Mississippi State and Arkansas. You get games like this late in the season. I think this is a really good one to key in on here for our listeners this week. I think it's hard to make a play in this game, but we'll see if you have any stronger opinions. Athletic Director Jeff Long at Arkansas is out, which means that Brett Bielema is also out. Now, at Mississippi State, Dan Mullen's been talked about for maybe the Florida job, maybe some other jobs as well. But Mississippi State, excuse me, Mississippi State off that close loss to Alabama last week, can they get off the deck? Can they go and beat up on a team that they should?
Well, they lost Arkansas last year 58-42, so there is some slight revenge there, but keep in mind, they've got the big rival Mississippi on deck, and it's a Thursday game next week. So you play Alabama in a game that you were really right in there until a couple of, at least in my opinion, bad mistakes by the offense trying to kick field. You're not going to beat Alabama with field goals. You've got to put the pressure on Alabama. He's going for field goals when he should have been going for first downs, in my opinion. And I think that took some air out of Mississippi State. They played Alabama really festive atmosphere. Now they play Arkansas, and they got Mississippi on Thursday. So you definitely could see a letdown for Mississippi State here. But you got an Arkansas team who just has not played well. They did win two out of the last three. They beat Mississippi, Coastal Carolina on that last ditch effort. But those are just one-point victories against teams that, you know, Coastal Carolina, they were 24.5-point favorite. So then they play, you know, LSU last week, and LSU beats them 30-10. Right in that price range for what was expected. So I don't want to put my money on Arkansas here, and the spot is so bad for Mississippi State, I can't trust them here. So I pass on this one and look for better games on the board.
Yeah, I can't blame you for that, and my apologies to the listeners there. I got some kind of tickle in my throat here during the show. but, you know, again, this is a situation that you run into here late in the year when you've got these coaching decisions that are coming out, and, you know, I think it's an interesting spot at Arkansas because reportedly from what I'm seeing on Twitter, and these are unsubstantiated rumors as of now, but someone's kind of passing these along, that when the announcement about athletic director Jeff Long came out, the players were applauding the decision. They seemed to be pretty happy with it, which would imply that they're happy to see Brett Bielema go. And if you've got a team like that that doesn't want to play for a coach, then why would you back them? Even with the spot that Mississippi State is in, even with the beating that Nick Fitzgerald took last week in that game against Alabama, he got rocked a few times. There were times where he looked wobbly, didn't look like he was going to be able to continue that game, still went out there, nearly led that big upset. I think it's kind of a fascinating game here for a lot of reasons, and obviously the easy thing to do is to pass, and we touched on that already. But you know, you will find situations like this here over the last 2 or 3 weeks of the regular season going forward to where you'll have this decision to make. And sometimes it's going to be a little bit more clear cut.
These are the type of games where I like to look at either second half betting or in game betting to see how the players come out, what kind of intensity they have. It's something that I have learned over the years is you can handicap a game as well as you possibly can going into the game, expecting a certain amount of effort coming out of the player, a certain amount of excitement. And then once you get to the game, it's just not there. I don't, regardless of if it was a bad week of practice or if the team is overlooking the game or something happened in the locker room where you just don't see the effort that you would expect out of these teams. And you see it more in college than you do in the pro, because in the pros you're playing for a contract. In college, if you're a senior right now and you're not going bowling, what kind of effort are you going to put in these last few games? So I would rather watch the beginning of the game and see what happens. If I have to get involved in the game, I'd be looking to play something once the game starts.
And that was a betting angle I talked about yesterday, where you're going to have these teams that aren't going to a bowl game, these teams that don't have anything to play for, and you play that guessing game before the game actually starts of, you know, what kind of effort am I going to get from this team? I don't think it's going to be good. I'm going to fade them. I think they're going to show up. I'm going to back them. Once you get a series or two into the game, you can start to see something like that. And I thought that we had a spot like that with Kent State the other night against Central Michigan, to where, you know, obviously Kent State didn't cover the number, but it was a 7-3 game after one quarter. The only touchdown they gave up was a kick return touchdown. You thought to yourself, okay, maybe Kent State, you know, is going to give a good effort here. Maybe I'll make a live play on them. If you would have made a live play, it obviously would have backfired. But the point remains that, you know, that, I think it's a really good strategy to take here, Brian. And I think that, honestly, not to go down a rabbit hole, not to go off on a tangent, we can probably do that once college football is over, but live betting is the future of the industry, because these full game numbers are just, they're getting so much tighter. There's so many more things you have to try to figure out, injury situations, motivations, all that. Once you can actually see it play out on the field and you can take that uncertainty away, I really truly believe that live in-game wagering is the future of this industry.
I definitely agree, and I'm going to switch sports with you here and talk about the Cavaliers against the Knicks the other day. That was a game, obviously, with the comments that LeBron made. He made them towards the ownership and the general manager as opposed to the players, but the Knicks took it as if it was a dig on one of their players, and the Knicks came out fired up. I had the Knicks as a play in that game. But once they got into LeBron's face and started yelling at LeBron right there, up until that point, the Cavs bench was lethargic. Cleveland was playing lethargic. That woke up the Cavaliers. And by the end of the game, the Cavs were the team with all the energy. And, of course, Cleveland comes back and wins. They don't cover, luckily. for myself. But that is something that as soon as that happened, you realize Cleveland was about to make a run. And if you are playing live betting, that was just an opportune time to get in on it. Your computer situations and everything that they put into the live gambling for the Lions is not going to take that into effect. So that's something that you could really take advantage of in live betting, which you can't do in pregame betting because you don't really know what the teams are going to come out with. You expect New York to come out with a good effort after what has happened, and they did. They played a great first half. But as the game went on and when they got into LeBron's face, you know, it's you don't swat away Superman or whatever that was in that Jim Croce song, you don't spit on his cape or whatever it was. But that's the way it is, and it's a great opportunity to make live betting profits.
All right, let's flip over to the NFL here for a few minutes, and let's touch on the first game on the board on Sunday, game 451-452. The Detroit Lions take on the Chicago Bears. The Bears failing to cover last week is a pretty sizable favorite against Green Bay. Mitch Trubisky almost threw for 300 yards in that game, and they still didn't come close to covering the number. Detroit played our hapless and beloved Cleveland Browns, who had one of the sickest beats both for the first half and the full game that I've seen in the NFL this year. I don't know what the hell happened at the end of the first half, but it cost the plus 6.5 backers. Full game, they were getting anywhere from 10 to 12, depending on when you got it. They lose by 14 because they throw a first and goal interception at the 5. But not the most impressive performance for Detroit last week. Are you willing to lay 3 with them on the road this week?
I bet Cleveland in the first half and the full game in last week's action. I gave out the full game to my clients, and I tweeted out that was the most Cleveland Browns game in a Cleveland Browns season, in a Cleveland Browns decade, basically, of Cleveland Browns football. It was just anything that you could do to lose a game, they were trying to do that, and it was so ugly. It was ridiculous, and it got to the point where it was laughable at the end. And Detroit took advantage of it, and that's what you do against these bad football teams that don't know how to win. You're able to make that, and considering all the money all week long came in on the Browns, it went from like 12 down to 10, and then Cleveland takes a 10-0 lead. And on any other team, you would ask me if I thought that was going to be a winner, I'd say yes. With the Browns up 10, all the money coming in, all the wise guy money coming in on that side, I still didn't think it was going to be a winner. And it was just one of those things, as the game went on, you knew they were going to find a way to lose. So that was definitely a Cleveland game. So Detroit didn't do a whole lot in that game to me. Didn't do a whole lot. You know, they went at 38-24, final line of 11. But Detroit's been very fortunate in a lot of these games, if you ask me. I don't see them more than like a 500 ball club, 8-8 team. They are a little bit better than Chicago here, but Chicago to lose to Green Bay like that coming off of a bye. Green Bay's offense had done nothing after the quarterback went out a few games ago. They give up 33 points to a Green Bay team who's really struggled offensively. When Chicago's playing a team that the defense could stop them and keep the offense from having to win the game, that's what the Bears have to do. The two games before that, they give up 20 to New Orleans and 3 to Carolina. The defense has played very well, and the teams were in that. They beat Carolina 17-3, and they lose to New Orleans by only 8. But once they get behind in a game and Chicago has to pass the ball with the rookie quarterback, it's when they get in trouble. Detroit does have a pretty good offense. The quarterback is having a really strong year. They've scored 38 and 30 the last 2 weeks. Detroit gets ahead here. That's the thing that I would be concerned about from Chicago. I don't want Chicago in a situation where they've got to come back in this game, and I won't be having anything on this before the game starts. But if you see Detroit getting out to a sizable lead here and Chicago has to pass the ball, I don't think they can do it, and you may be able to place an in-game on that.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what's going on with this line where bookmaker Detroit opened -3, -15. Now the line is -3, -01. So it looks like right now a little bit of sharp involvement on Chicago for this game, but this number pretty much dug in at 3 across the market. So I think that kind of tells you, you know, what the odds makers anticipate going forward with this game. And, you know, maybe we do see some sharp investment on both sides. I don't know. But, you know what, overall, this is one of those NFL weeks where it's just, it's not a great card of games. You've got a lot of ugly quarterbacks starting in these games. And, of course, you've got, you know, this Stafford-Trubisky matchup here, which would appear to favor Matt Stafford quite a bit, but Detroit, not a whole lot in the yards per play game this year. So we'll have to see what happens with the line move for that one. Brian, one other game I want to touch on with you here quickly. This is game 453-454. We'll slide down the board just one spot. Kansas City takes on the New York Giants. And what's interesting about this game to me is that, you know, we saw earlier on in the season, the teams coming off the bye got steamed every single week. Well, you've got a Kansas City team here coming off the bye. Looks like this number opened a little bit high because people are backing the Giants right now. This number's down to 10 flat at some shops.
Yeah, the line may be a little bit high, but you got to keep in mind that road favorites coming off a bye do very well. Last week, they cashed 2 out of 3. But, yeah, the line is high. In fact, Pittsburgh had the high line last week at 10, went off a little bit higher than that, I believe, and that was the one loser, a double-digit road favorite, which is what we find Kansas City in here. Kansas City off the bye, you've got one of the best coaches in the NFL backing them up after that bye. So you would think Kansas City would have a good game, especially after losing to Dallas by double digits going into the bye. But it is a non-conference game, and usually when you take a look at teams, the least important game is your non-conference games, and this is their only non-conference game left as the season progresses. We got Buffalo, the Jets, Oakland, and the Chargers the next 4 weeks. The Giants, a lot of people think they gave up last week. I'm one of them. The coaching staff of the Giants has not done a very good job. I know they've had some injuries, and I made a comment early on this season that I didn't think the Giants were going to make the playoffs and took some crap on the internet for it. But, you know, it's worked out in my favor. I'm not happy for it. If you're a Giants fan, I could care less if, you know, if they win or lose. I just didn't think that they were a very good team coming into the season. Not a big Eli Manning fan. After the way they played against San Francisco, you would think they would come out and play well, because anytime they question your manhood that you would quit, you would come out and play. But it's not the first time this season that they have talked about the New York Giants in that way. And they do have a rival, Washington Redskins, coming up on Thursday. So it is a short week. I prefer the Kansas City side. I just don't know if I can get there laying double digits. Maybe this is another one where we see how the Giants come out to play this game. And if they come out with the same energy they did last week against San Francisco, that's not a team I want coming from behind. And Kansas City has the running game and has the ability to just not turn the ball over, and you can't get back in that game against Kansas City unless you do something on your own. So see how that game starts out, and if the Giants don't play well, go against the Giants the remainder of the game.
Well, Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. What's going on over at the website right now, Brian?
I put up a play in the action for tonight, and I'm working on the rest of my football plays for the weekend. I've gotten off to a nice hockey start. Basketball, as I said, they had the Knicks the other day. I don't put out a lot of plays, so if you're looking for a lot of plays, you look for somebody else. But I do try to find the best bargains on the board, and there'll be days I pass on certain sports, but I have pretty much at this time of year a play up every day. So we're giving you the best of the best here going into the holiday season.
Well, you can follow Brian on Twitter at BLeonardSports. Brian Leonard, WagerTalk.com. Good to chat with you again this week, man, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Great. Best of luck to everyone.
Solid insight there and analysis from Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com. One more guest here on the Wednesday edition of the program. That is Mr. Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds, number one on Twitter. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. Appreciate your time as always. Thank you so much for joining us here. And Wes will join us again later in the week for our Super Contest segment. No sports to hear this week, so I'll be recording with Wes on Thursday night. So we're going to spend just a couple of minutes on the NFL here today, namely to talk about this Thursday night football game between the Titans and the Steelers. Steelers, a 7-point favorite here, Wes. What do you think about that number?
Well, it's kind of interesting that we take kind of like the sentiment before last week's card was played, I think most people, and you heard a lot of the punditry and some of the quote-unquote experts say, hey, you know, the Steelers, you know, they, after their slow start, they've kind of come around and they look like they're the best team in the AFC. And then all of a sudden they were life and death to beat the Colts on the road last week. And then, you know, people kind of forgot about the Patriots, you know, off the bye week, and they go into Denver, and, you know, Denver gave them a lot of opportunities with some bad special teams play early and, you know, put the Patriots kind of in the driver's seat. But then, you know, kind of the good play caught up to the good fortune with the Patriots, and then eventually they started, you know, driving the length of the field for scores and weren't getting lucky defensive scores or just good field position or special teams. I mean, so, you know, they pretty much dominated on that Sunday night game. So now it's like, okay, now it's back to normal where the Patriots look like the number one team in the AFC instead of Pittsburgh from last week. But, you know, looking at the number, it's probably the right number. I mean, this is a little bit of an interesting matchup because, you know, Dick LeBeau, the longtime Steelers defensive coordinator, is the Titans defensive coordinator. And now, you know, they go on the road and he gets to face his former team. I think it's probably right. I mean, I would lean a little bit to Tennessee. Tennessee really hasn't been impressive. They were kind of the favorite, I think, before the season, to win the AFC South. And they really haven't taken the division, I guess, kind of by the horns here. You've got two teams with the Colts, obviously, with no Andrew Luck. They have not been a factor. And then now Houston, having lost Watson at quarterback and losing Watt and Merciless and all the defensive injuries they've had, they've kind of fallen by the wayside. So it's almost like them and Jacksonville by and Tennessee, I don't think, has really impressed at all in any of their games this year. But, you know, is this something where they're sitting on kind of a good performance here? And, you know, I think that this could be it. I think if I had to take it, and I haven't taken it yet, I would probably lean to the Titans plus 7 in this spot.
You know, one of the things I think it's really interesting about the handicap for this game is that we know that players don't like the Thursday night game. We know that they would like to see the Thursday night game go away for good. I don't know if the players would make an exception for Thanksgiving because of, you know, the tradition of the Lions and the Cowboys hosting games there. But players hate this Thursday night game. And you don't see Tennessee talking about it too much. But Ben Roethlisberger has been very, very vocal here thus far about, you know, how you're still hurting on Sunday, you're still hurting on Monday. Doesn't give you a whole lot of time to go through practice, doesn't give you a whole lot of time for your body to recover. Does that have kind of a carryover effect for Pittsburgh? Because, I mean, that guy is kind of your team leader, and you know, he was kind of scrutinized a little bit for his flip-flop back and forth and the whole anthem protest thing and all that. Do you feel like there's a trickle-down to the rest of the team with the fact that Roethlisberger is just so, you know, critical of this Thursday night game?
I think there could be. I mean, you know, in terms of, I guess, motivation, I mean, you're going to, you know, the motivational edge, just by the nature of who the teams are, you would think would go to Tennessee. I mean, Tennessee knows that, hey, we're going on the road. This is a business trip. We're playing the, you know, the mighty Pittsburgh Steelers here. And, you know, that this is a really big game and I think a really big test for them as a barometer of where they are as a football team. And I don't think that this is as big a game for the Steelers because, I mean, they look like they're going to, you know, I don't want to say run away, but they look like they're a pretty good bet right now to win this division with Cincinnati struggling, Cleveland having not yet won a game. Baltimore's been so up and down and had a lot of injuries. So, I mean, just the motivational thing would be for Tennessee because I think this is going to tell people a lot more where Tennessee is, maybe more so than where Pittsburgh is.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see that being an angle here as well. And that's why the 7 kind of interests me a little bit. And I think that, you know, while we're talking about it in college football in terms of the power ratings say this, the situational and the motivational angles say this. We're at that point now in the NFL where, I mean, you're always at the point in the NFL where you have to look at the situations, but this is one to me where I look at the number, and like you said, I think the number is right, but then when you factor in the total package of things, the number does look like it probably should be more like six or something like that. So there's probably a little bit of line value on Tennessee here in this spot. I don't know if I love it enough to take it for the Super Contest and send my picks in early, but I do think that, you know, you may run into a situation with these Thursday night games like that throughout the rest of the season where one team pisses and moans about it and the other team just goes about its business.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, yeah, and this is also an opportunity for Tennessee in the fact that, you know, they're kind of a smaller market team. Not that Pittsburgh's that much of a bigger market, if at all, to Nashville. But, you know, the Steelers are in a lot of these bigger primetime type of games or even Sunday national type of games. And Tennessee really isn't. I mean, if you look, you know, one of the things I look at every week, just because I'm a geek for this stuff and I'm always curious about who's announcing the game, you always see the Tennessee game maybe going to, you know, some of these teams like Tennessee or Indianapolis or Jacksonville, you know, a lot of these AFC South teams except for Houston, their game is going to like, you know, 10% of the country. And a Steeler game, an average game, is going to 25% or when they're in the big Sunday afternoon game, I mean, where you're getting 80% of the country or something getting their game if they're in that late 425 window. You know, Tennessee doesn't get a lot of these showcase games, basically. So, I mean, I think that this is an opportunity for them. Now, you know, Mariota, I think the big injury story of the game is Mariota and the fact that, you know, you haven't seen a lot of his scrambling, I guess, as much this season because of that ankle injury where he gets outside the pocket and that makes him more dangerous. I think he's starting to get a little bit better now, you know, after he's played here a couple games. So I'm interested to see if that'll be another wrinkle in their offense. Pittsburgh took some injuries the last game with Joe Hayden now being out indefinitely with the fibula and Mike Mitchell being questionable in the secondary. So Pittsburgh's got some injuries to deal with. So, you know, Tennessee, if you're saying, hey, West, pick a side, it's going to be the Titans plus 7 for me.
Before we look at the Sunday card here, and we got some games to touch on there. Specifically, we're going to look at Arizona-Houston real quick. How about this? Only six of the teams in the AFC, the six playoff teams, over 500 right now. Does that surprise you with how poor overall the AFC has played?
You know, yeah, it does a little bit. And I mean, a lot of teams get injuries. But, I mean, the teams, I guess, that you thought were kind of the I don't know if this is the right word, the premium teams. You know, a lot of those teams are still very good. The Patriots, Pittsburgh, Tennessee, of course, who was the preseason favorite in the AFC South. But I think you've seen some teams that have really kind of fallen below expectations or below what the standard is. I mean, we saw it, you know, kind of with Denver on Sunday night. You know, it's like, what has happened to this team? I mean, they always had at least, you know, that they don't have a great quarterback and their offense isn't setting the world on fire, but how bad the Denver defense was. And this was a team that was built around, okay, get a quarterback that can kind of manage the game, that isn't going to get us beat, and the defense will be able to carry us. And they go to Philadelphia and give up about, you know, over 50 points and give up 40. Not necessarily the defense. I mean, that includes the special teams as well. But, you know, the Patriots score 40 on them. They went to the Philadelphia the week before, gave up 50. And it's like, you know, what has happened to that defense? The Raiders, I think, have clearly gone below expectations, which I think were too high to begin with, coming into the season, and then Carr was out for a couple weeks. So, you know, some of these teams that you kind of thought were going to be good or be constants, haven't delivered. I mean, even Indianapolis, which didn't have high expectations, but you didn't think Andrew Luck, I think, would be out still in week 11 and pretty much now not going to play this year. I think before the season, if you were believing the Colts people, he was going to be back the first few weeks of the season. He hadn't been back. So I think a lot of factors. I think a lot of it is injuries. And then and also the fact that a couple teams just haven't lived up to what I think you would expect them to be.
All right, well, let's touch on this Arizona-Houston game, and we've got the potential for a lot of bad quarterback play this week. Buffalo going with Nathan Peterman on the road against the Chargers. They're going to sit down Tyrod Taylor. And, of course, then there's this game, Blaine Gabbert versus Tom Savage. How excited are you, Wes?
I am thrilled beyond
you sound thrilled
here for this game. Yes, when I saw that this was one of the games sent, I was like, oh, man, you sent me the worst game to talk about. But, it's kind of a game that, it's hard to know what to expect here because, if you watched Arizona last week, clearly they were playing the Drew Stanton. They never really got a lot going. And, Seattle kind of, it seemed like, kept them in the game for as long as they could, and Arizona had their chances and just never could really get anything done until the last drive when you're laying Seattle, whether it's -5.5 or -6, you're like, okay, we're good now. They're not going to go down and score. And, of course, they do go down and score, and if you had the -6, you had to get a blocked extra point just to push the game. So it's funny kind of how that stuff works. They don't score all game, and then when you need the one stop, teams don't get it. But Houston last week, I thought Houston actually was in a decent spot with the Rams having to go back cross country, going to New York and winning and putting up as many points as they did. And early on, Houston was right there. The Rams were slow to get going, and then all of a sudden it just exploded. Usually when I look for two bad teams, I couldn't really venture to pick a side here because I have no idea, and then I don't know if the odds makers really have an idea here either, which is why the line is pretty much pick now everywhere. When two bad teams play, sometimes I kind of actually look to take the over when you got two teams that look like they're probably out of it in terms of potential playoff contention or teams that have had a ton of injuries. So my temptation here would be to take the over, thinking that, this is just one of those games that looks so bad that it's liable to get wacky and you're liable to have a bunch of wacky special team scores or defensive scores or whatnot. But this is a tough game for me to get a handle on. It definitely wouldn't be one I would use in the super contest unless you've got super insight into one of these teams or you're a local resident in one of these markets that you really feel like you have a good handle here. This looks like about one of, because I can't say it's the ugliest because there's a couple other ones as well, but this isn't one of the most aesthetically pleasing games on the board for sure.
No, definitely not. And the reason I wanted to talk about it here today is because I knew that we were doing the Super Contest segment later in the week, and I figured this game wouldn't show up on either one of our cards. So I figured there would be no reason to talk about it on that segment. But, one of the things that is interesting, I think, is that as we go forward here in the NFL and you've got these games with bad teams that seemingly aren't playing for a whole lot. I mean, Houston probably not going to find a way to make it into the playoffs, and Arizona certainly not. Generally speaking, you probably can find edges on games like that. I just don't think this is one of them.
No, I mean, you know, you're kind of guessing a little bit here. I mean, like I was saying previously, I mean, if I were looking to play this game, it would be somewhere with the total because sometimes, you know, you get these games with the two bad teams, and, I mean, you're going to end up getting, like, shootouts. I mean, you just seemingly see those, you know, I mean, and even in pro football, I mean, college football, it seems like every game is now a high-scoring game unless it involves, like, Alabama or some really good defense. But, I mean, you'll tend to get these, I guess, sometimes in the very later part of the season where you'll have two teams that are totally out of it, and the rules and everything is hedged, you know, or it's kind of balanced toward the offense, you know, because the league is going to want more scoring, even though, I mean, I don't think the overs have been exactly killing it this year. I mean, it seemed relatively balanced and even maybe leaning to unders, but this is just one of those things. I mean, you're thinking, oh, Blaine Gabbert and Tom Savage, this has got 10-7 written all over it. And then all of a sudden it's, you know, 31-28 or something. So, I mean, That would be my way to go here. If you're going to go with this game, is just to probably go with the over.
All right, let's move over to the NBA side of things here. Big 11 game card tonight. These teams have played about 14, 15, 16 games, somewhere in that area. So about 17% of the season or so has been completed by these teams. When we last left the NBA, I kind of asked you if there was anything that you had picked up on, anything that you've noticed to use as a betting angle. So I'll ask you that again, now that we've got another week's worth of data in the NBA. Anything you've picked up on that's been really profitable for you?
Well, I mean, just picking up on some of these teams, I mean, I'm amazed with the run that Boston has been on. Because, I mean, they've had a couple games with Al Horford out of the lineup and Kyrie Irving. Of course, we know about the Gordon Hayward injury. And somehow they just keep winning and they just keep covering. I mean, I think last night, it depended on the number. I think they were something like 11-2 going into last night. So it's either 12-2 or 11-2-1 because I actually had Brooklyn +7 on the game, and you had to get a three-pointer in the final few seconds to actually push. You know, Boston just keeps covering games. I mean they were an underdog to Toronto on Sunday, and somehow managed to win the game, and they're just pulling these games out. And I mean, I think it's an attestment to the superior coaching of Brad Stevens, but also, you know, these guys are just finding ways to win, and it's hard to go against. I mean, and then you look at, I guess, some of the real surprises. Probably the biggest surprise to me in the league has been Detroit, who I think is like close to 6 units. I mean, if you've been betting money line for them every game, is close to like 6 units to the good, you know, less than a month into the season. And, you know, I think that they've been a big surprise that they'd right now be, I think, like second in the East. So, you know, just looking at a couple of these different teams, I mean, you know, you would think that there's going to be some regression in terms of, these teams getting out to these great starts. And then, you know, just looking at some of the other individual teams, I mean, they've gone to a favorite now, but I think, did we anticipate on, you know, November 15th, you know, if we were looking ahead a month at the start of the season, that Cleveland would only be like a 1.5-point favorite at Charlotte, you know, we would think, oh, they're going to be laying, you know, 6 there, because you saw a lot of those games last night where you had two teams against, you know, two kind of premium teams with Boston and San Antonio favored at Brooklyn and at Dallas respectively. And the lines were around 6, 6.5. And, you know, with Cleveland and Charlotte, you would expect like 5 or something if you were looking at your perception. 5 or 6 at the beginning of the season, and tonight they're only like 1.5. And because Cleveland has been so bad against bad teams, and they just have not covered a lot of numbers. I mean, this whole Cavs first quarter thing, I think they've covered like I don't know how many games they play, but I think they've covered like maybe two or three first quarters all season where they are even not even covered, but where they have the lead. And then, of course, you're seeing kind of some of the popular NBA Twitter memes, you know, Cavs first quarter again and Warriors third quarter. I saw that the other night. I was lucky to get a cover with Orlando. Orlando's tied with them at halftime. It's like you've been able, I think, to do fairly decent here going against the Warriors in the first half. But then maybe before the game, because a lot of books will not give third quarters at halftime. So you kind of got to bet some of these quarters before the game. You know, taking the Warriors third quarter hasn't been a bad bet because all of a sudden it's a tie game and then they go to the fourth quarter and all of a sudden they're up 13. It's like, how did that happen so quick? So you see a little bit of tendencies in some of these teams and, you know, just a couple of things that you notice. And but once it becomes, I think, like public in the media, that's when maybe it probably loses its value.
Now, I could be wrong about this, Wes, but I want to get your thoughts on it. I feel like when you look at NFL, college football, even NHL, MLB, a lot of these numbers are based off of power ratings. And it's not to say that they aren't the NBA, but I feel like from an NBA standpoint, there's more emotion. There's more perception and recency bias that comes into the market. I feel like you kind of see that here tonight with a situation, like as you mentioned, Cleveland opening a dog at Charlotte. Detroit only 3 at Milwaukee. Now that number's up to 4.5 because the Pistons have gotten off to a really good start. Milwaukee's underachieved a little bit. That number's not 3 weeks ago, but it opens 3 here this week. I think if you play against those emotional biases, you could do really well in the NBA.
Yeah, I think so too. And that's kind of one of the things I've tried to do a little bit. Is look at these, with recency bias, not only over a week or a couple week span, but sometimes even over a couple day span. When you see these teams that win the big national TV games on ESPN or TNT, that's going to inflate their value a little bit short term. And, you know, sometimes you can play against that if you get a sneaky underdog. I kind of tried that. Unfortunately, didn't succeed Saturday the Bucks. You know, they go to San Antonio and win, and then that's a perfect spot to, I think, go against them the next night or to go against them the night after if they've got a night in between, you know. But a lot of those situations, you can really, I think, find ways to go against teams, off those big national TV wins and finding those spots. Because I think, I think with ESPN having such a contract, and I mean, they're obviously the market leader in terms of day-to-day sports coverage, you know, They're going to cover these NBA teams so much, and I think you're seeing. I mean, we know that the NFL is king, but the NBA, I think, has at least narrowed the gap slightly at the minimum in terms of the coverage. I mean, you're seeing, that. It's really gained, I guess, in popularity. And I mean, regardless of what the NFL is, whether it's that there's too many rules or the anthem protests or whatever it is, or that the product is boring, I mean, you're seeing a lot of national media types like, hey, college football is the most intriguing thing in sports right now, and the NFL, just hasn't been. And I think the NBA has kind of benefited from that. And with the more media coverage, you get more hype on some of these premium teams, and that can give you value on some of these, gear underdogs, I guess, in smaller markets that they're not getting the attention. I mean, you've seen one of the most profitable teams this year, so far in an undercovered story has been the Orlando Magic. They're one of the few profitable teams. If you've taken money lines with them every game, they're kind of on that plus, kind of above that Mendoza line. So that's where I think you could find little spots, and that's what the NBA I think is about finding schedule dynamics and spots.
All right, well, let's flip over to the amateurs here and let's talk some college basketball. We've got 6 days or so worth of data on college basketball. It's been an interesting season so far. We've seen some teams lose some of those games where they pay good chunks of money for the opposition to come to town and fill out the non-conference schedule. We've seen a couple of marquee matchups, of course, last night, Michigan State, Duke, Kansas, Kentucky. Have you picked up on anything here so far, Wes, that you're using as a good college basketball betting angle?
You know, it's tough to find, I guess, with only a few days into the season. But, I mean, a couple things that I'll notice with some of these underdogs is just, taking them in the first half has proven to be a little bit better. I mean, I had one personally where I split last night. It was Lipscomb in Alabama. And my thought about that was, Alabama, the first night of the season, got a lot of good money and some sharp money against. They were playing Memphis on a neutral at the thing that the Naval Academy has in Annapolis. And Colin Sexton, their five-star point guard, was out for the game, or had a one-game suspension. And Alabama seemed to win pretty easily. I think they won by 12. They were like 6.5-point favorites, and they closed, I think, maybe 3. So Memphis took the money, but yet Alabama pretty much was wire to wire in terms of the game and easily covered. And then last night, you look and they're playing Lipscomb, and it's 14.5, and the line really doesn't move very hardly at all. I mean, Alabama didn't get a lot of support, and then Sexton was back in the lineup. So I thought, okay, good spot to go against Lipscomb, and Lipscomb runs that Belmont system with the former Belmont assistant, now the head coach there. And, Lipscomb hangs in for the first half, really hangs in for probably the first 30 or so minutes of the game, and then it got away from them, and they lost by 20. So you're thinking, oh, easy win for Alabama. But, I think, you're seeing some of these dogs, I guess, kind of hang around a little bit in the first half. You also saw it the other night with Milwaukee at Iowa State, and Milwaukee actually ended up wire-to-wire covering the whole game. So, it's something I think you want to look at if you're not confident, because some of these teams will hang in for the first half, and then it'll get away from them a little bit. You saw that, too, with Iona and Syracuse last night. And depending on your number, I think Iona probably still covered the full game. But it did get away a little bit. I think they were down 4 at the half, so they easily cover the first half. They were, I think, a 10.5-point full-game dog. And then this superior team kind of gets away a little bit. So, maybe there's a little bit of opportunity to try. I mean, you're not going to get huge edges, but if you play a dog first half and full game and it's close at the half, maybe to try to play that second half on that favorite and see if you could kind of middle and try to maybe get a middle of that, or at worst go like a 2-1 with 3 bets on a game.
I know that's something that you like to do a lot is to do that, play the full game in the first half, aim for that middle. If you go 2-1, that's fine. If you go 3-0, that's awesome. I know that's something that you like to do a lot in college basketball. Let's look at one of the games here tonight, game 7-23, 7-24, Indiana and Seton Hall. Seton Hall favored by 13 at the open here. What's going on in Hoosier land?
Yeah, and I'm actually a little bit surprised, because that always kind of messes with your head where you're thinking, okay, maybe this is going to be a setup, because I look at the line here, and I think somewhere around 12 and where it was actually the appropriate line, and I'm seeing Indiana take some money here, open 13, now 11. Indiana, I think they are learning a whole new system. I mean, keep in mind with Archie Miller there, none of these were really his recruits. I mean, there were kind of three that are partially his recruits because he convinced the kids to stay that were committed under Tom Crean for this class. But one of the things with Indiana, and you haven't seen the results bear fruit, they haven't really put a ton of offense in. He has really been working on defense because it is a total flip-flop from what they had under Tom Crean and his staff, which, you know, was able to, you know, hunt and chuck a lot of threes and, you know, space the floor and score a bunch of points and then couldn't guard lampposts. Whereas Archie Miller is a defensive first coach. They want to run a little bit of a pack line defense, you know, and force you to take shots, you know, kind of clog the lane and, you know, make it tough for you to get to the rim. Well, you know, they did that with Indiana State, and, of course, that leaves Indiana State. You're going to leave a few open shots, you know, and another team might hit them, and Indiana State did and hit like 15 threes on Indiana and ended up beating them by 21 points. So, you know, it's tough for me because I've seen two games, even though I thought the defense was better against Howard on Sunday night. They still gave up, you know, in the mid-70s, but I think a lot of that was Howard decided they were going to run, and Indiana thought, okay, we'll just run with them. But the defense needs a lot of work still, and this is the first, you know, really good team they've played, and Seton Hall has weapons and can be very dangerous. This is a team that I think is going to be better later in the season, and I mean, a lot of this, you know, is coming from a fan standpoint because I'm an Indiana alum, but I do admit I'm a little bit surprised to see them taking money this early here against Seton Hall. I thought Seton Hall would see the money, and sometimes you'll get that where the line moves a different way than you thought it would.
Last thing I want to ask you about here, Wes, this is something that I think is very important to talk about, and I'm glad I have you here on the show to discuss this with. A lot of times people don't do a whole lot of college basketball study. There are 351 teams, football's going on. They're just out there betting college basketball to bet college basketball because it's on the board and there aren't a whole lot of football games on Tuesday or Wednesday. There's only the Monday night game on Mondays, obviously. It changes a little bit in bowl season where you have, you know, games almost every day. But a lot of times people are going to walk into a new college basketball season and bet the names that they know. They're not going to realize that some of those names, like in Indiana, or, you know, maybe even like a Butler here getting five on the road at Maryland, or a Creighton against Northwestern. Now, those are names that they know: Butler, Creighton, Indiana. You know, everyone always just assumes Kentucky and Kansas and Michigan State and Duke are all awesome every year. So are there any of those really name brand teams that are out there, whether they're name brand from a mid-major standpoint or from a blue blood program standpoint, that are just down quite a bit from last year that you're looking to go against?
Well, I mean, and that's one of the things too, is, you know, sometimes we have the tendency to just kind of, when we're reviewing results, look at the games that maybe are just on the board. I mean, not every game is on the board. Sometimes you'll have one of the betting board teams play a team from a conference that's not on a betting board. And you'll see some of these guarantee games where teams get big checks and they go in and win in some of these places. I think we saw it last night with Liberty winning at Wake Forest. So, I mean, in terms of, I guess, the premium names of teams that, you know, I think are maybe a little bit down, I think, you know, Indiana is one of those. I'm not saying I'm endorsing going for or against them tonight. I have no idea really if I'm going to do anything with that game. But, you know, Ohio State is clearly a team that I think is going to be a little bit down in the Big Ten with a new coach and a bunch of, you know, new players and, you know, kind of a mishmash of previous coach Mata's recruits and now new coach Holtman's recruits. So that's I think one of those examples to look at. And I think you did bring up an interesting point with people just betting college basketball that aren't following all of the teams. I'm not saying you have to follow all of the teams, but when you look at some of these ratings that are done for college basketball, don't necessarily use those ratings in terms of making your picks other than getting information. I mean, it's like, okay, well, this favorite is -6 and KenPom says it should be 8, so I'm going to go with the KenPom. Keep in mind that the sports books and the guys making the numbers, they've got the KenPom subscription too. So you're not going to pull a fast one on them or thinking you're going to outsmart them, you know, thinking, okay, I'm going to go with this. They know what, you know, KenPom says the line should be with all of his metrics, and then it produces a predicted final score or what the line should be. I mean, don't just go off that. If anything, maybe look to play against that in terms of perception. I mean, that is, you know, when in doubt, I would almost look to play against it because, I know what some of maybe the casual bettors are going to do, you know, when he says it should be 8, -8, and it's -6. I would look maybe to take the +6, even though there's a little bit of a discrepancy there. Because I just think that, you know, you got to look a little bit at perception and recency bias, like we were talking about earlier with the NBA, can also play in with college basketball. I mean, we saw it kind of last night. Now it ended up being a close result, but Kentucky didn't cover either of their first two games at home. You know, people, and most casual people don't know that Vermont's actually a pretty darn good team. So everybody was against them. Okay, Kansas is going to lay them out, and it was a sloppy game that went down to the final possession, and Kentucky ended up covering, I believe the closing number was +5. And it actually scared me off the game, but I leaned to Kentucky, and, you know, it kind of stayed in that range the whole game, in that two-possession range, whether it was Kentucky leading or Kansas leading. So, you know, you get a team off a bad performance, and the natural inclination or proclivity is to go against them, and then they come out and they cover. They play well the next game. So, you know, keep in mind that recency bias with college basketball as well.
Lots of good insights here on today's show from Wes Reynolds. You can follow him on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one to see all of his plays and, of course, chat with him about some of these concepts there as well. Wes, thank you so much, man. I'll talk to you again later in the week here for the Super Contest segment.
Okay, Adam. Looking forward to it, man.
Good show there today with Brian Leonard and also Wes Reynolds. And I apologize for that coughing fit that I had there during that segment with Brian. It actually got worse once I was able to mute my mic. So I'm glad I was able to mute my mic and had a guest there with me to cover for me a little bit. So thanks to both of those guys here when I was a little bit not as sharp as I generally am here on the show. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, two professional handicappers join us. The first, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. The second, Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment, myself and Wes Reynolds. And then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the Odds Report. I don't know how next week is going to shake out just yet. We may do a two-hour show on Wednesday to get both Brad and Rolf on the show. I may release something Thursday, just a pre-recorded show with Brad and Rolf, and then we'll have our Friday Super Contest segment. I don't know if Brent's going to be able to join us. His off day is Wednesday. He works Thursday. Thursday is obviously Thanksgiving. So I'll try to let you know as that picture gets a little bit clearer for later next week, but we'll try to bring you as much Bang the Book Radio content as we can there with the Thanksgiving holiday. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.